Welcome to Money Markets and Masterminds, a Citywire South Africa podcast that delves into the intricate world of finance, investment, and strategic decision-making. If you're a fund selector or an independent financial advisor looking for insights, analysis, and expert opinions to enhance your perspective, you're in the right place here with me, editor Ruan Joester. Today is our second episode of a newish underlying series in partnership with Morningstar South Africa and their head of investments, Sean Neertling. The series, aptly called Mind Over Markets with Morningstar, provides the latest insights on monthly investment trends. So for the foreseeable future, the first Monday of every month, we will be exploring key market developments and dissecting economic indicators, which will cover everything from equity and fixed income to commodities and alternative investments. So let's get straight back into it. Welcome back, Sean.
Thank you, Ruan. Looking forward to the discussion.
South African assets reacted positively to news of a coalition government after the ANC lost its 50% majority following results of the national election in May. Markets were especially positive about the announcement of a government of national unity, and specifically the potential partnership between the ANC and DA. There has been a clear sentiment shift, with SA assets all rallying significantly over the last 2 weeks, until Friday the 21st of June. And recent market movements do suggest there's a South African specific story underlying performance. The question is, what are the main drivers? How sustainable is this performance? And what should investors pay attention to as South African transitions into a coalition-led government? Sean?
Yeah, Ruan, I think that is the main question. I think if we look at it, just particularly the recent moves, or the moves, I suppose, post-coalition announcement. So the real way to look at this is that the simple answer is most of what we're seeing is pretty much sentiment-driven. You know, what's driving markets is really particularly low, I suppose, investor expectations pre-election that turned out to be somewhat less bad than what the market was pricing in. And I think the ANC partnership with the DA in particular is seen as net positive by the business community. The absence of, I suppose, parties like the EFF and MK up to this stage has alleviated a lot of the fear, particularly around anti-business policy, which could potentially creep in. I think, not quite out of the woods yet. I think there are a few things that we want to pay attention to. So I think things like cabinet positions will be important, and particularly, strategically important portfolios like finance. The market will pay a lot of attention to that. And then following on from that, I think, once things are settled, there'd be a lot of signaling in terms of policy direction, so both design and in terms of implementation. So I think, the base is there for a really good, I suppose, coalition, something that works more closely with the private sector as well. I do think that there are still political incentives and other players and role players in parliament, that are not necessarily aligned and could potentially have ulterior motives as well. So I think, what we've seen is particularly positive, and we are seeing that, that direction of travel is good, but mindful that this is still very short term, so paying attention to how the broader picture stacks up.
Zooming in on local markets on a historical basis, South African assets and local equities in particular have delivered returns in excess of most developed emerging equity markets, but have been especially underwhelming over the last 5 to 10 years. Foreigners have been net sellers of both South African equities and bonds for an extended period of time. So what I want to know from you, Sean, is have we reached an inflection point where we see foreign flows coming back into the local capital market?
Yeah, Ruan, that's a really good question. I think, again, it's too early to tell if we are at that inflection point. Again, right now, what we're seeing is pretty much expectations turning out to be less bad than what was initially priced in. So, I think this is a sentiment driven, and that has attracted a lot of foreign interest. That money tends to be less sticky than what it should be. And I think if expectations around what this coalition government, is expected to do turns out to have less substance, you could see a lot of those flows reversing. So I think, that's pretty much our observations 3 to 4 weeks out. If you just look at fund flows in particular, what we need to see is a bit more persistence and to a certain extent, almost reversal of flows out of South Africa. I think what we have seen, post-regulation 28 is that money has actually been moving more offshore as that limit, increased. So I think, you know, it's going to be local investor or allocator specific. But right now, there's not enough evidence to suggest that, you know, structurally much has changed to basically pull that, I suppose, wave of capital that has left to come back. And I do think even if that happens, it will be lower and slower than probably what people expect. But that's what would be needed to have a proper run on South African equities. I also think local investors have been burnt by the rand. So I think, you know, taking a view on the currency at this stage is not necessarily in investors' best interest. So I think, you know, from a fund flow perspective, I do think that will be slower. If you just look at foreign flows, again, the data lags a bit here. So we're probably a month or so out in terms of seeing what's tangible and what's not. But if we just look at, I suppose, offshore entry points, for example, into South African equities, so the SA MSCI or MSCI SA, that entry point through an ETFs in ETF, we have seen some significant moves there, and we're seeing foreign buyers basically come back through that environment. We're also seeing sort of, you know, high activity in our bond markets. So again, some foreigners coming back. The bond markets themselves, you know, some really good auctions by National Treasury, so our bonds are being oversubscribed. So I think the flows, again, you know, post-announcement has been really positive. The big question is how sustainable is this? And that, again, is largely going to be dependent on, I suppose, how the partnership develops between the ANC and its coalition partners here.
Sean, if you look across the JSE, where is all the value sitting? Are local equities so beaten up that we can just buy the market through a passive entry point, or should just buy the market through a passive entry point? Or should we go a bit further in terms of the underlying sectors? And if so, which sectors do look attractive? Is it resources, industrials, financials? Where do you expect the money to go and do something productive?
Yeah, Ruan. So we spend quite a bit of time on this. And I think if you break out the main South African sectors, so for South African resources, we think, you know, the investment thesis for platinum is particularly attractive and remains intact. I think that's mostly a supply side argument, with South Africa having an effective monopoly on global production there. I think choosing the right companies there could be tricky. So the investment case, for example, for an Implats or an Amplats is very different to a Sibanye. As an example, so we think stock picking matters a lot here. I think if you shift across to iron ore on the commodity side, you know, that's more demand side thesis, which is dependent on China. And given the challenges, I suppose, in that country on the property side, on the property market, we are somewhat circumspect on, I suppose, the short-term outlook for iron ore in particular. Industrialization largely drove that, I suppose, Chinese growth and GDP story. That's probably run its course. And while we're still seeing steel demand being quite robust, you know, the investment case for China is not really as compelling. So that has implications for iron ore. I think if we shift away from resources to banks, there's actually a few reasons to be quite optimistic here. You know, most of the South African banks have really good fundamentals, so really strong, healthy balance sheets. They've provided well for potential loan losses, have been less pro-cyclical, I suppose, in their lending. And they also don't hold the type of exposures that some global banks have. And if you look at it from an interest rate perspective, you know, I suppose the next interest rate move in South Africa is potentially down. So while on the surface that could be, I suppose, net negative for banks, it could potentially boost credit demand. So we see banks as fairly compelling. And all of those top tier banks, so FirstRand, Absa, Nedgroup, and Standard, they performed really well over the last month or so. It's also a bigger part of the index. So you could find, you know, banks going on a particularly good run and delivering sort of double-digit returns. We're very positive on them. And then I think, you know, the last segment or sector that we would look at would be largely industrials. And here it's really a mixed bag. So for banks, you know, you could possibly just buy a basket of banks and have really good returns. Again, we think stock pickings in that industrials mix really does matter. And what's been really interesting in terms of the most recent rally is pretty much that small and mid caps have actually outperformed large caps, and particularly what people have seen as those traditional rand edge stocks. So you're looking at companies like Richemont, Bats, and Anheuser-Busch. And I think what people often, I suppose, don't appreciate is, you know, at the broader JSE level, you know, the look-through allocation, just from a revenue perspective and an earnings perspective, is that 60% of revenue pretty much comes from offshore. So South African companies are actually really well diversified. That mid-cap, I suppose, sector or super sector in particular, there's a couple of really good companies over there. So we're really positive on the outlook for South African equities. Again, that being said, we don't expect these returns to occur in a straight line. So the potential range of outcomes is still pretty wide at this point. And then I suppose to come back to your question on the passive, we do think you can buy, you know, the market for cheap. But we would supplement that, for example, with, I suppose, what people would call more value-oriented positions to really unlock the value outside of the main indices or the main index in South Africa.
Sean, what about sovereign bonds? South African government bonds, the views on them last year were quite mixed, particularly heading into the medium-term budget policy speech late last year. And bonds have been under pressure for most of last year and traded with elevated volatility. What should we read into the recent moves in South African government bonds and fixed income in general in South Africa?
Yeah, and so I think, you know, South African government bonds are probably our highest conviction investment idea, both South African nominal and inflation-linked bonds. We also like cash. We think, you know, investors are being really well compensated there in terms of rates, and also provides a bit of liquidity portfolios. We remain cautious on credit. So I suppose that would sum up our views on fixed income in general. For bonds, in very simple terms, you know, at yields of between 10 and 11%, even if we take inflation, we expected inflation at 6%, which is the upper end of the Reserve Bank's target bands. You know, bonds are offering real returns of around 5% plus, which we think is really compelling. We also think that the valuation piece is largely supported by fundamentals. So something, you know, like interest rate expectations and inflation is an important part of, I suppose, valuing bonds. We think the SARB is highly credible, and to be honest, they don't always get the credit they deserve for managing, you know, an exceptionally challenging economy. So global economies are still figuring out how to deal with higher levels of interest rates and inflation. If you contrast that with emerging markets and South Africa, especially through the SARB, you know, there's a very well-developed playbook. So the SARB has been really good in terms of managing investor expectations and being transparent. And that really does underpin, I suppose, our conviction in bonds and inflation in particular. Bonds are not without risk, though. So I think, you know, the thing that we paid the most attention to here is just that South Africa's debt profile is deteriorating. Just if you look at the direction of travel in terms of debt to GDP, debt by itself is not necessarily bad. So I think it's more about these increased debt service costs that are particularly high as a percentage of government spending. And then that's exacerbated by, I suppose, debt not being spent on productive assets like infrastructure and instead being used to pay, I suppose, elevated public sector wage bills. So I think we're not spending enough on assets that could boost economic growth to levels that would support the level of borrowing. The mitigant for us is really that most of this debt is denominated in local currency rands and not in foreign currency or US dollars. So that does, I suppose, keep most of that outlook within the within our own, I suppose, our own grasp.
In time of such uncertainty, we have 65% of the world's population going to the polls this year or have been to the poll this year. Has there been a fair amount of interest in real or alternative assets ranging from property to gold and hedge fund, the safety asset or the safety net asset classes? How do those assets look in the current environment?
Ruan, that's a great question. I think, you know, we've seen a fair amount of interest in gold, and I think that is a topic we fielded a few questions on. My colleague Michael Kruger has actually done some work on the metal, and we are somewhat circumspect about its longer term role in portfolios. I suppose I can sum up our thinking that we really look at gold. You know, it can act as a bit of insurance in a portfolio. The evidence, however, does show that it has a lagged effect in market distress, and especially in market corrections or what we'd see as deep drawdowns. So usually the first move in a market correction is towards liquidity, and there we see assets like US Treasuries being massive beneficiaries in that first round. And then other safe havens and currencies to a lesser extent, like the yen and the Swiss franc. So gold tends to be a secondary beneficiary there. What's uncertain is that we are in this area of, I suppose, de-dollarization. where these potential range of outcomes can be quite wide. So it is something we're paying attention to. We, however, do think that, you know, allocations to the underlying companies is probably a better way to express, I suppose, that conviction, especially companies with unhedged production, where you're paying a cheap price for a relatively better miner. So we think that the entry point through the miners, through the listed companies, is potentially a better way to allocate to gold than the metal itself. And then I think, you know, if you look at some other parts of the alternative space, we have also fielded a fair amount of questions on hedge funds, and we continue to deepen our work there, both on the global and on the local side. We do think there are highly credible managers, for example, in the local market. But in an environment where South African equity and bonds are particularly cheap, you know, we currently don't have high enough conviction to basically warrant a place in the portfolio. But again, these alternatives, we continue to deepen our work purely from a portfolio robustness perspective.
Sean, when you put this all together, how does this affect the way you are looking at building and positioning portfolios at the moment? Have you changed your allocations more towards South Africa, given this apparent re-rating that you're seeing coming our way?
Yeah, and I think that's the million-dollar question. I think, you know, from a long-term asset allocation perspective, these recent moves haven't influenced our positions. We remain unweight South African equities because we don't think these potential returns occur in a straight line, and it can be quite choppy. So we remain overweight SA government bonds, and we think cash is attractive because rates are elevated. But we haven't changed our longer-term positioning. I'd say the thing that we would most advocate in an environment like this is more from a client perspective, and for clients to stay invested in the right mandate for their willingness and ability to take risk. It is a highly volatile environment, an environment where there are no free lunches. You know, so you could actually find that in order to unlock potentially higher returns, you need to take on a disproportionately higher amount of risk. And if we pull this all together in portfolios, you know, for rand-based investors, there's a few key drivers that we look at. The first of that would be asset allocation, so holding a good mix between local and offshore, and maintaining positioning in line with, again, those client investment objectives and not being swayed by, let's call it short-term moves. I think the second thing we'd pay attention to is just diversification. And this is actually more about correlation or just the interplay between assets that we focus on. So we want to build portfolios that are somewhat, I suppose, asymmetric and not all lined up in the same direction. Again, because markets can stay, I suppose, overpriced or mispriced, you know, for longer. And then lastly, I would say, you know, we pay attention to what we'd call security selection. So whether that's through third-party fund managers for allocators or DFMs or single stock securities, we do think that there's opportunities and pockets of value in South Africa and globally, you know, that largely sits outside of passive markets. The work that we've done as a team at Morningstar would largely support the combination of these things as being most beneficial to clients to meet their long-term objectives in this type of environment.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. And thank you, Sean, for joining us again and being part of the Mind Over Markets with Morningstar series. We look forward to meeting with you next month for another in-depth discussion and some actionable insights. To all our Citywire South African listeners, thank you for tuning into this episode of Money Markets and Masterminds with me, editor Ruan Uester. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your network. We are available on all major platforms such as Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Until next time, goodbye.